sharing this. It's my profound honor to be able to bring you the witness and testimony of one IQ al-Rasuli. He is the foremost expert on Islam in the world today. And he is calling in from Europe. He is the author of a series of books called Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. IQ, there was something in the news today that I wanted you to comment on. At the peace conference regarding Syria, America was all a-Twitter over the fact that the Iranians said, oh, yeah, let's put a six-month transition period for Assad and then let the Syrian people vote and choose their own leader. Well, why would anybody in their right mind think that is capitulation on behalf of Iran?
It's not capitulation on behalf of Iran. It's logic.
Of course. Mm-hmm. Wasn't there an election in now, mind you, Syria today is a city state. Syria is either the Islamic State, which is the majority of Syria, or the city state of Damascus. They held an election a year ago in the city state of Damascus, and they didn't even have to cheat. Assad won an overwhelming vote of confidence from the citizens of Damascus. Now, why do you think that is so?
Because he is a better alternative than the others, whether it's ISIS or the ones who are supported by Obama.
Yes. You know, the alternatives are Hezbollah or the Islamic State or al-Nusra. Those are the alternatives to Assad. And they know that when Assad, as ruthless as he may have been, and probably is, that the Christians, 2 million of them, could survive there. The Zoroastrians could survive there. The Kurds could survive there. The Sunnis and Shias weren't at each other's throat there. But that without Assad, it is a wholesale civil war. That's why they voted for him. That's who they'll vote for when they're given the opportunity to vote again. In fact, any sane individual would make that choice.
Sorry, the question is this. Even the 6 months, there would not be enough stability for anybody to actually vote.
Well, there will be in the city-state of Damascus.
Only.
Right.
But they will vote for... But they will vote for Bashar al-Assad.
Yeah, of course. That is correct. And the reality is that the majority of Syrians who have left, some, 8 million Syrians who have left, might have voted a different way, but they aren't there anymore. They can't vote. Now, Assad's going to win a landslide. But let's look at it. Is there any Islamic nation that doesn't have either an absolute dictator or a de facto dictator? And by de facto dictator, Erdogan is a de facto dictator. Do you happen to hear what happened today in Turkey?
No, I honestly haven't heard.
Okay, well, yesterday in Turkey, the Erdogan raided the offices of any media outlet that would criticize him or his Islamic party. So, no free speech. Today in Turkey, two young boys, one 8, the other one 10, was arrested and is facing 10 years in jail for having ripped a portion of a campaign, it's not even a campaign, but a poster of Assad. By the way, you know how the symbol, how most posters with political leaders have, you know, they're always, their eyes are up, they're looking past the horizon, you know, they're sign of they're above the fray and they're the leaders. Something, by the way, God says he specifically despises. His symbol for this campaign is exactly like Obama's. You know, the circle with the little sun coming up over the horizon?
Yeah.
The symbol that he's using for his campaign is identical. So anyway, two young boys are going to be sent to prison for 10 years for disrespecting Erdogan, which makes him a de facto dictator.
Yes, but anybody below the age of 13 cannot be found guilty with such an egregious degree of punishment. That's not logical.
In a civil society. In
correct.
A civil society.
Yeah,
yeah, look at Saudi Arabia.
Look at Saudi Arabia. As a civil society.
Correct. That is absolutely true. Look at Saudi Arabia. The fellow that was put in jail received 100 lashings in 10 years in a Saudi jail. His crime was he criticized the royal family and insulted Islam. So
well,
you think that's
Islam? The fact that he criticized the royal family, and it's not a royal family, by the way. Everybody speaks about the king of Saudi Arabia.
Yeah.
In Arabic, king is called Malik. They never had a Malik even before the death of Muhammad 1400 years ago. He was a sheikh. A sheikh means a tribal leader.
Right.
All of a sudden, we have princes and princesses. Bullcrap. They don't exist only in the mind of the West.
You know what the Hebrew word is for king?
No.
You've already said it. Malik. The reason I bring that up, IQ, is that I have made the claim, and it is irrefutable, that the Arabic alphabet is the Hebrew alphabet, and that every important word in the Quran, including Quran itself, which is from Kara, which means to read and recite in Hebrew, that every important word in the Quran is Hebrew. The Quran's greatest lie, beyond the fact that it confirms the Torah when it negates it in every possible way, is that it's written in pure Arabic. It's written in Hebrew. Every word is Hebrew.
Correct, because the researchers of the study of Islam, the Arabic language of the Quran, they found out, both the exegetes who are Muslims and non-Muslims, there are 118 words in the Quran that have absolutely nothing to do with the Arabic language, and without which the Quran would not exist. They're all foreign.
Correct.
Most of it is Hebrew.
Oh, yeah. But the very alphabet of the Quran, including the word Quran itself, is Hebrew. The word Malak is the Hebrew word for king. Almost every Arabic word is based on the Hebrew language. And the reason for that is because Muhammad and those who lived with him were illiterate. There was no written Arabic at the time. And so to convey what Muhammad had dreamt up and recited in a written form, they had to come up with a written language, and the only literate people around were the rabbis, and they wrote in Hebrew. And so they based the Quranic revelations not in Arabic, but in Hebrew.
Yeah, something else people really don't realize, even in the West. The sequence of words, Aleph, Bet, or alphabet, is Hebrew.
Right.
To start with, it's Hebrew. It's not English. Right. It's not Yiddish. It's not Turkish. Right. It's not Greek. It's not Latin. It's Hebrew. Yeah. Aleph, Bet.
Yeah. Yeah, Arabic numerals are not Arabic numerals, they're Hebrew numerals. They were all designated in their present form in Hebrew, centuries before written Arabic, in fact, 2,000 years before written Arabic even came to exist. And they were all numbers as well as letters 2,000 years, 2,500 years before there was a written Arabic. But
as you know,
beyond the
everything to do
beyond
with Islam,
of course,
as you know, everything to do with Islam
is a lie.
Has been plagiarized, plundered, pirated, and perverted from other people, and then they claim it belongs to them.
Yes. Matter of fact, one of the things that I do with Prophet of Doom is I begin it to say that the Quran is plagiarized, but it's not just plagiarized. You know, to plagiarize is to copy from a single source and claim that somebody else's material is your own. And the Quran doesn't copy from a single source. It copies from two sources. All of the early revelations in the Quran are from the Hanifs, from the pagan religious sect down in Yemen, something that you and I have affirmed many times.
Right.
And then all of the later texts in the Quran are plagiarized from the Torah, the prophets, and the Psalms, plagiarized, taken from those two sources. But a plagiarizer typically does a reasonable job of correctly citing their sources. Muhammad's twisted version of what is found in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms proves conclusively that his primary purpose was to deceive. Because while he may mention an Abraham, he may mention a Noah, he may mention an Adam, and call them by their Hebrew names, the fact is that his presentation of their lives is the antithesis of who they really were and what they did.
In fact, there is very little information regarding the Hebrew prophets. Very little. I mean, the Muslim will read the name Moses, for example. All they know is that Moses was a prophet and the leader of the Israelites. They don't know where he was. They don't know how he was born, where he was born, and what he has done all throughout his life. All this is completely missing. And the same thing with Abraham, with Isaac, with Jacob, with every single biblical name or Hebrew name in the Quran. There is no background information. Zero.
Of course. You know, they don't know, for example, that Moshe, the actual Hebrew name, is from Masah, which means to draw out. And that Moshe met Yahweh, and Yahweh, when he introduced himself to Moshe, said, "I am Yahweh. I shall be remembered and recalled by no other name." And his primary purpose was that Yahweh chose to use Moshe to draw his people out and away from the most religious, the most militaristic, the most political place on earth, Mitzrayim, which is called the crucible of Egypt. And that's where he went to free his people from religion and politics, to liberate them. And that he used Moshe to scribe his Torah. So he 70 days and 70 nights, or 40 days and 40 nights, but up there with 70 individuals, Yahweh revealed his Torah via Moshe, his teaching and guidance. And it is specifically designed so that the covenant, you mentioned Abraham, the covenant with Abraham, the first requirement is to walk away from your country, to disassociate from religion. You know, Islam and the Torah are opposites in every possible way.
But Islam is the opposite of every belief system on the planet.
Yeah.
Because Islam is the enemy of every belief system on the planet. Islam is contradiction to every human aspiration. It will destroy everything on this earth if it takes root and expand.
What we're going to do is we're going to return and we're going to talk about why Islamic societies converge to complete chaos without a dictator, and why the real God, Yahweh, despises dictators. So IQ, this is something we've talked about in the past, but every Islamic country has a dictator over them, except those that are in absolute chaos. We killed the dictator in Iraq, absolute chaos. We killed we're trying to kill the dictator in Syria, absolute chaos. We removed the dictator in Afghanistan, absolute chaos. We killed the dictator in Libya, absolute chaos. We deposed the dictator in Yemen, absolute chaos. So it's either dictators or absolute chaos. Those seem to be the only options.
Because that's what Islam functions under. It cannot function in a liberal society. The idea of democracy does not exist in the Islamic mind. Even in the Arabic language, there is no word to describe democracy. So they use the Greek word democracy as demokratia. But what I'm getting at is there is no equivalent, a concept of freedom in the Arabic psychology or the Arabic language. And of course they transmitted it to the Muslims all over the world. So the Muslims also have no concept of democracy. They never had a democracy. Under Muhammad there was no democracy. It was terror. And after Muhammad, every year, every single century was terror. No democracy.
What's the opposite of expressing one's own choice under free will? What would the opposite of that be?
Islam.
Yeah, Islam. That's what the word Islam means, is the antithesis of expressing one's choice under the auspices of free will. Islam means to surrender, to submit.
Yeah.
Right? So the very word Islam means to surrender and to submit. It's the antithesis of choosing. And the Quran is and Muhammad's hadith testimony are based 100% on predestination. No one has a choice. The hadith over and over again, and the Quran says you do not have a choice in your leaders, you submit to them. You do not have a choice in whether or not you want to listen to or obey Muhammad. It's you either listen to him or I'm going to torture you forever in hell. So the Quran is filled with obey and submit. You do not choose.
Muhammad said he was the slave of Allah. Every Khalifa, every leader of Islam, in their letters, and we have their letters, some of them, he says, I, Uthman bin Affan, or whatever name, the slave of Allah, will do this and this and this. Well, if somebody is a slave, there's no love between a slave and the master. That's why the word love, that we understand it in the Judeo-Christian tradition, does not exist anywhere, and I mean literally anywhere, in the Quran or the Hadith. There is no love between man or between the Muslims and their God Allah, or between Allah and the Muslims.
No choice, no free will. You know, in the Hebrew, they didn't take this part of Hebrew into Arabic, but in Hebrew, a huge percentage of the verbs are modified by a mood. And, for example, the imperative mood is the principal mood of volition, and it expresses second-person volition. There's the cohortative that expresses first-person volition. There's a mood that expresses third-person volition. Volition is expressed in the very action verbs of the language. The language is based, A, on stems, which define the relationship between the subject and the object relative to the action of the verb. And the verbs are, a huge percentage of them, are modified by moods, which are expressions of volition. Whose choice is it? Is it God's choice? Man's choice? Collectively our choice? Somebody else's choice? But choice is always essential to what is written in the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. It's the antithesis of Islam. So what you find in Islam is that the religion precludes people taking responsibility for themselves. And that's why dictators are necessary in Islam.
Yeah, but it also disallows the Muslim. It doesn't matter how much they educate themselves. Of ever investigating, comparing and contrasting other beliefs with the Quran. That's correct. Why they cannot evolve. It is impossible for Muslims to evolve. I mean, we repeat this, and I repeat it many, many times. Take it as an example. We have 57 Muslim majority states in the world, covering maybe 15 million square miles of territory, some of the richest lands on earth, and they are the least productive, least inventive, least creative humans in the history of humanity.
Yeah, and they're responsible for 99.9% of the world's terrorist acts.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, there is your bottom line. Is there something dreadfully wrong in this religion that precludes choice, that precludes individual responsibility, that orders people, demands that people submit? This is a world which we should not have. The last that Muhammad claimed was revealed. Now, of course, he made it up, plagiarized much of it, but that which he didn't plagiarize and bastardize, he made up just to serve his own personal interests. But the fifth surah was the last to be revealed, and right at the end of the fifth surah, Muhammad realizes he's got a problem, that what he has said is internally contradictory. In fact, it's so contradictory, he even has verses that say, when you come up with contradictions, you know, you throw out the old one and you accept the new one, and the old one goes into oblivion, as if this his wannabe God was incapable of ever telling anybody something that was dependable. But in the fifth surah, right at the end of it, he says, you know I've got a problem. And he admits, anybody that has questioned the Quran has lost their faith. So don't question the Quran. What does the Quran say about those who lose their faith, who apostate?
Yeah, it was very convenient, because he knew. He knew if they question him, he couldn't answer. It says in the Hadith that he used to get angry when people questioned him and he couldn't answer it correctly. He used to get very, very angry. So he created this verse to cover himself up.
That's right. And he says, if you question the Quran, you will lose your faith. And then the Quran says that if a Muslim recants on his faith, you must kill him.
Of course.
So,
but Islam says, the Quran says, there is no compulsion in religion.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have it. There is no compulsion in religion. That's why you kill somebody who leaves Islam. Because there is no compulsion.
Directly contradictory.
You know, exactly.
That's the fastest way to prove something is untrue is that you, if it has internal contradictions, and of course the Quran says there's no compulsion in religion, which of course Westerners love to state and say that Islam is not does not impose itself. And then the Quran also says that your choices are that as a Muslim you must fight, and your only choice, you must fight and kill anyone who does not submit to Islam until the entire world submits to Islam. And it says that if anyone questions the religion and leaves the religion, kill them. Death would compel a lot of people.
Well, this is why the Quran is not a holy book. This is why Allah is not the same as the God of the Bible, because Allah is Muhammad. Muhammad, very clever, he put the Quran and alleged that it is the words of Allah, the God of pagan Arabia. Very clever.
Yeah. But the problem, of course, is that in the Quran, where does Allah spend all of his time? Not in heaven.
In hell.
In hell. And what's Allah doing in hell with in every depiction of Allah in the Quran?
Either watching or participating in torturing the people that he predestined to be unbelievers.
Correct. Yeah, in fact, the Quran says that everyone was predestined from creation to be either a believer or an unbeliever.
So what we have...
Yeah.
Sorry to
interrupt
you, but what the Muslims have, or the so-called followers of Muhammad have, is a God who created 80% of humanity to be plundered, pirated, enslaved, raped, and destroyed by 20% who follow him.
Oh, now you're really way too kind, because what you're suggesting is that the 20% who are Muslims who submit to this perverted man and his wannabe God are somehow spared of those things. But the primary victims of Islam
are Muslims. Yeah.
Are Muslims.
Yeah.
Muslims rape Muslims. They sodomize Muslims. They murder Muslims. They enslave Muslims far more often than they do other people. The victims of Islam are Muslims are the primary victims of Islam.
But we agreed that Islam is the enemy of every human being on the planet. Why? Because 20% of the Muslims are against 80% who are not Muslim. 85% Muslim Sunni are against 15% Shia. 15% Shia against 85% Sunnis. So Islam is the enemy of everybody.
So knowing that, is there any chance that we can make Syria better by deposing Assad?
None. Zero. Absolutely not.
Did we make Iraq better or worse by deposing Saddam Hussein?
But we have done that. America and the West have done that in every single country they went in, trying to make them democracies. You can't have democracies in Islam.
Yeah. You know, we took a dictatorial regime, a secular dictatorial regime in Afghanistan, deposed it, and it was replaced by the Taliban. That was worse, wasn't it? And Afghanistan today is worse than it was controlled under the Taliban. Because we deposed then that dictator,
Colonel
Omar. And now in Libya, we deposed Muammar Gaddafi, and look what you got in Libya.
A dysfunctional state.
Right.
Everybody,
we deposed Saddam Hussein in Iraq, and we have a dysfunctional state.
Yeah.
You know,
in the Yemen, it's the same.
Of course. And so the answer is that...
I mean, you name it, it's the same.
So the choices in Islam... are either that they are savages, like we're witnessing in Libya and Syria and Iraq and Yemen, that they're absolutely uncontrolled and vicious savages, or they are controlled by a dictator who's the savage.
You mean the choices. A dictator who is more savage than they are, yes.
Correct. Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, those are the two choices. You either got an individual who's a savage, or you got the whole country being savage.
Correct. nothing else in between. None.
There's nothing else in between. So how is providing more weapons going to resolve that problem in Syria?
But we agree. We have to quarantine Islam and Muslims. We agreed that there's no other solution.
There is no other solution. Quarantine. And quarantine means you have to disengage. Matter of fact, I've been studying Proverbs 6 from the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And the first instruction is to disengage. He says, you know, my child, the first thing I want you to do is I want you to disengage from governments, from political pledges and oaths. And you need to completely distance yourself from all forms of human authority. That's what you need to do. And yet, what do? You know, we enrich them. We empower them. We give them military might. You know, we provide hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons to them. And then we enrich them with hundreds of billions of dollars for their black ooze. And then we somehow expect that, oh, that's going to work out really swell with people that are poisoned by this vicious, terroristic, warlike, and deadly religion?
As Einstein said, the sign of a stupid person is the one who repeats an experiment. Again and again it fails and repeats exactly the same experiment, expecting a different result.
Right.
That's a sign
and
of
yet
stupidity.
And you look at Syria, where we're trying to do exactly the same thing. We're arming both sides. We're bombing the country. And we're demanding that the vicious dictator step down, which is exactly what we did in Iraq. To complete and utter failure. In Afghanistan, to complete and utter failure. In Libya, and it's all fresh.
He's got Putin. Bashar al-Assad is lucky. He's got Putin now.
Yeah, but you know, even in that, and you and I have talked about this, well, I think that Russia will preclude the fall of Assad in the city-state of Damascus for better part of a decade. They will ultimately fail, just as the Soviet Union failed against the American-backed Mujahideen of the Taliban and Al-Qaeda in Afghanistan. They will eventually fail, and Assad will die. And Syria, Damascus, will be a twisted ruin. That's what's ultimately going to happen. I think all that Russia is doing is two things. Delaying the inevitable, because the Islamic State isn't going away. And number two, they are making certain that when the fall occurs, the whole world's going to be engulfed in war. And they were pushed into it by a belligerent United States.
Well, they are belligerent, and they are tampering with China, and China is not going to back down.
Nope.
And China is a superpower, not just a second-rate superpower. It's a superpower. After all, trillions of dollars are owed by America to China, not the other way around.
Correct. Let me just give you an example here. Prophecies and Yahweh's, from Yahweh's prophets speak of a World War IV, a World War III, and a World War IV. The World War III is all Islamic. We're seeing it manifest right now in Syria. It's going to eventually go worldwide. But there is a World War IV that follows 3 years later, 3.5 years later. And that war, he says, 200 million men will march across the Euphrates and come into Israel. And you just mentioned China. You know, the United States has provided $30 billion worth of weapons to the Pakistani government, and they hate us. The Chinese announced this week that they're investing $46 billion building a superhighway from China all the way across Pakistan. It enables the Chinese to get directly to Iran and to ultimately to Israel. But it is unifying their investment in this world, strengthening their investment in this world, while the United States tries to blow it apart with weapons. The Chinese are playing the game smart.
Well, Russia
the
is
American
playing the game. The only one who's not playing the game smart is America under Obama. That's all.
Correct. Right. Although it's not Obama alone. Bush was equally as bad with his invasions of Afghanistan and of Iraq, where Obama invaded Syria and Libya. Now, did you hear that today and yesterday, the U.S. Department of Defense announced that it has and will continue to put American troops in Syria?
No.
Yeah.
I haven't heard that.
Yep. America has committed to troops in Syria. We're going to use the troops two ways. One is we're going to embed frontline troops both in Iraq and in Syria. In Iraq,
with the Iraqi army. These troops in Iraq, they already had them before.
Yeah, but in Iraq, we're going to fight side by side with the Iraqi army in Iraq.
Oh, really?
Which means we will be with the Iranians, and the Iranians are now getting all of their intel from the Russians and are being coordinated by the Russians. So American troops are going to get their intel and marching orders from Iranian generals and Russian generals in Iraq, and then in Syria, we're going to have them fight alongside the Kurds, the Peshmerga, the Embrace Death.
Unbelievable.
All the while, of course, you've got the Russians actually manipulating the Iraqi army, and the Turks, our allies, bombing the Kurds. But that's what we're going to do. And in addition to that, IQ, we announced that we're going to have Apache gunship squadrons operating out of Syria. The Russians have a connection with it. My guess is that you probably heard about this or read something about it, but Tony Blair, the prime minister, extraordinarily liberal, a socialist secular humanist over the UK, who was George Bush's partner in the ill-fated invasions of Afghanistan and Iraq that made bad situations infinitely worse. He admitted this week that the invasion of Iraq led directly to the Islamic State, and apologized for that. One of the few times that a foreign leader actually accepted responsibility.
Well, at least he was honest enough after 10 years or 20, whatever number of years. Yes.
Almost 15.
15 years. But it's too late, unfortunately, and nobody is learning. I mean, the tragedy is they're not learning anything. Our leaders are not learning anything.
Mm-hmm.
They keep repeating exactly the same mistake.
That's correct. We continue to try to intervene in the Islamic world using force to compel democracy and to replace dictators, and it it turns a bad situation infinitely worse every time. And we've done this now for a very long time ago. It goes all the way back to our CIA meddling in Iran. And even immediately after that, the first Afghan war, where we hired the Taliban and Al-Qaeda and used them to fight a proxy war against the secular Russian-backed government of Afghanistan. Every time we do this, we fail.
I know, ironically, the Muslims now are conquering us with their own invasion, without war.
Correct. Yeah, the one that we put into place, because the most of the refugees are from Syria, but immediately beneath Syria in terms of numbers are Afghanistan. And then after Afghanistan, you have Iraqis, and then you have Libyans.
No, for Africans, so, good God. A lot from Africa, from Somalia, from Eritrea, from the Sudan. By the way, we have not addressed the fact that these hordes of undocumented and unrestricted Muslim invaders from Africa and Asia are bringing with them exotic diseases that Europeans do not have immunity against, as well as the usual pathogens of AIDS, syphilis, and TB. The latest report coming from Germany, that is exactly what the medical services are saying. They're saying Europe's medical system will collapse under such strain. And the economic cost will be catastrophic, besides the social and security ones.
Right. Because for two things. One is that Muhammad created Islam so that he would have power and money and all the women he could rape without having to work. And he never instilled any work ethic in Muslims. Yeah, it was exactly the opposite. He says, what you need to do is get off your lazy behind and go to work. Stop being dependent. Go to work. Take responsibility is his constant advice to us, particularly in his proverb I'm just now translating. But in Islam, work was so foreign to them that the only reference to work in the entirety of the Quran and Hadith has to be when two jihadists are sitting there laying on the ground watching this guy harvest his date tree, and they're just marveling. They're just saying, can you believe this guy doing this? What is this that he's doing? That's the only mention of work.
Yeah, most Muslims in the West are parasites.
They are correct.
Parasites
wherever they are. That's just the nature of Islam, is it's created parasites. They're not going to be productive citizens. But while they're carrying these horrible diseases, because there is, you know, that all of the diseases that have finally been brought under control in the West are still rampant in the world of Islam, because the world of Islam is so impoverished. But beyond that, and there's no vaccines because they think that the vaccine is a great threat. But beyond that, the most deadly pathogen ever conceived by humankind is Islam. And they're bringing in this disease wholesale. The deadliest time in human history was the first 100 years of Islam, was the deadliest time in human history per capita.
Yeah, now you always talk about the God of Israel. The God of Israel said, I shall curse those who curse you, I shall bless those who bless you. The Europeans have been cursing the Jews for 1,700 years. In a way.
Except the Muslims.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly what I mean to both of them. I'm not a religious person, but you keep quoting, so I was reading the Bible.
That's it's an essential statement, and of course they brought this on themselves. In fact, that's what in the proverb I'm analyzing currently. He said, your words have ensnared you, trying to rob others of their freedom using your words. They have turned and they have ensnared you. This is exactly what's happening to Europe. Thank you, IQ.